We have my guest today, journalist Carl von Wolferen, whose article on UN's review called Karl Rove's Prophecy was published in January and was something really provocative. I wanted to talk to you. We're going to talk to you today, and 2 weeks from now, we're going to finish it off. Welcome, Carl von Wolferen, to our KZWAX airwaves.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
You titled your article, Karl Rove's Prophecy, and begin with explaining how those in charge of our empire can create their own realities and can continue to do so unchecked by the mainstream media and seeming to provide an example of what you're talking about by the demonization of Vladimir Putin and the accusation of Russia's interference in our elections and now elections all over Europe. Perhaps you comment on that.
Yes, well, you know, that famous quote of what we now know it was Karl Rove when he talked to the journalist Susskind that, you know, we now create reality and you study it and then when you're studying it, we create yet another reality, et cetera, et cetera. It's usually been seen as, you know, an illustration of the hubris of the George W. Bush administration. But you could also see it as a prophecy that has been fulfilled in the meantime, because in actual fact, we are surrounded by news and analysis that explains a reality that is a fantasy. And a very good example of that, perhaps one of the pivotal examples, is, of course, the demonization of Putin, demonization of Russia in general, but especially Putin as an individual. And it is very intense, very widespread, and relentless in Europe, northern Europe, at least, as it has been in the United States.
Well, you point out that the elites of Europe tend to follow America's lead, and now we read that there's all this concern about hacking. In fact, they had an intelligence, 17 intelligence services here, could not produce a shred of solid evidence they could present to the public that there was any hacking. At the same time, they've forgotten about what was proved was that the Democratic Party's National Committee was sabotaging the campaign of one of its two candidates, and that's been forgotten.
Yes. Jeff, I think that a lot of this analysis, a lot of this commentary still starts from the premise that we live in a rational world and that we live in a world in which you know, there is some fundamental decency in reporting and all that. But things have changed so much. And Karl Rove actually prophesied this, you know, what the reality is that meets us through the media, newspapers, TV, commentary, and so on, is fiction. It's successful fiction because it is widespread and generally believed, even though people here may have some doubts and may be skeptical and sometimes wonder because there are, of course, quite a lot of inconsistencies, especially when you look at the news on Syria, for example. Nevertheless, what else can they fall back on? It's just a few sites on the Internet, sites that I call samizdat sites, like the, you know, the kind of literature that was popular in the Soviet Union, written by dissidents that disagreed with the official line, samizdat. You can see those sites on the Internet and programs like your own that give room to voices that have a different story to tell. But they are nothing, you know, compared to the mainstream media, certainly not in Northern Europe and also, of course, not in the United States. I think that you could see this as a form of intimidation because a lot of this fictitious reality is so obviously untrue. You say like the Russian hacking, there is no proof whatsoever. You know, Jeff, sometimes I think the fiction part of it is so transparent that it is done on purpose to tell you and me and everybody else, look, you know, take it or leave it. What are you going to do about it? This is taunting us. It's a form of intimidation. And, of course, any journalist who values his or her career cannot start going after the true truth, because that will endanger his or her career. So we are stuck in a situation that none of us, people who follow political life, you know, seriously, say in the last quarter century, we could never imagine that this situation would come about. I certainly couldn't.
Well, it's when you go back and see certain situations, major events like the assassination of President Kennedy, in which any kind of public discussion that challenged the official narrative of one Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone did the killing, and you have all the intelligentsia of the United States, with maybe one exception, Michael Parenti is the only one in the United States who challenged that. But logical thinking would say, if a U.S. Marine deserts to the Soviet Union in the midst of the Cold War and comes back to the United States, he will be put on trial for desertion,
yes,
not given a job, a state job in Texas.
yes.
But these questions are never asked because there's no discussion.
And you mentioned the Warren report on the assassination, the murder of John F. Kennedy, could be seen as a milestone. It was something perhaps at the beginning of a general takeover of untruth, of, you know, political beliefs and political, the story of the United States, and not only the United States, of the, say, what was until recently called the free world. And of course, the even more momentous lie is with the 9/11 story, because unless you concede that on that day, the 11th of September 2001, the laws of physics stopped operating, there is no way that you can see the official report, the 9/11 report, as telling the truth. It's not possible. This is without pointing fingers at any suspects. It is just the report cannot possibly be true. So today, when people say we do need another investigation, an honest investigation, an investigation that is carried out by parties that have absolutely no connection whatsoever with any culprits, those people who say that we need this are immediately, of course, marginalized as believing in conspiracies and what have you. Conspiracy theorists is one of the most successful epithets that come the way of journalists that are serious. It makes journalists feel guilty for their curiosity. And what is a journalist if he is not curious, if he doesn't ask follow-up questions? And so at the moment, and also in Northern Europe, in standard journalism today, there is no space for follow-up questions of very doubtful events, like a lot of the terrorist attacks in the cities of Europe and a lot of other things.
Well, one thing you point out in the article, which I have discovered, if you are a journalist with a reputation, you cannot take a chance on speaking out and question whether it's Kennedy assassination or 9/11, because you will then be smeared and then be required to devote your entire time to investigating 9/11. Even if you just raise the question, you will be challenged. And it's one thing most Americans don't know is during the Bush administration, there was a man named Cass Sunstein, a neocon married to Samantha Power, our UN ambassador appointed by Obama. He put out a paper saying that the 9/11 movement should be infiltrated by U.S. government to do what it's done is make...
Yeah, you mentioned this is a very interesting point, because Sunstein, what he wrote about the subject is so interesting, as he never says anything that he could later defend as having said in a court of law or so. He treats the subject as if this is as if such belief is a danger to the good order of the United States, without actually addressing the subject, the topic. I think Griffith, you know, the famous Griffith, who has done a great deal of work, pioneering work in the 9/11 investigation, wrote a book in which he analyzes what Sunstein has been saying. It's one of the most interesting documents on the subject that I think listeners to your program ought to read. There is so little of this now around, and there are so many people who should, concern themselves with this, because this has been the beginning of what I call the triumph of political untruth. And if we allow this triumph to go unchallenged, the triumph of political untruth, if we allow this to go unchallenged, things can only get worse, Jeff.
And they have been. I mean, it's interesting to go back before 9/11, and there was kind of a lazy attitude. People wondered what was going to happen in the Bush administration. You read the newspapers before that. You had at the same time the Project for New American Century, which was under the radar here. It had to be exposed by the Sunday Morning Herald in Scotland, when yes. All our pundits of the left, I should say, or quote unquote, in Washington and our intelligentsia had not said a word about it, and the fact of the matter have not said much about it since. But those same PNAC people were in. We're still around during the Obama administration. You point out there was a continuation, I pointed out on my radio show, a continuation from the Bush administration through Hillary Clinton with Secretary of State and her appointees to the present day. And this has never been a discussion within so-called, quote-unquote, left circles in the United States.
Now, the big question now, of course, is whether this continuation will continue under Trump. And, you know, it's a very interesting subject that I'm sure many Americans are also wondering about, because Trump has said he is going to do something about what is now generally known to be the deep state, but especially, of course, the power of the CIA and other the whole intelligence, so-called intelligence community, as well as the banking world, which is, of course, connected with it. But the point is that the question is whether this fictitious reality is going to be examined because of this new president, or whether he is going to be swallowed by it himself, and whether he also will, at some point in the not-too-distant future, realize that he has no choice. And Obama must have realized he had no choice.
Well, yesterday I read that he is about to appoint Elliot Abrams of Iran-Contra fame.
Yes, I know.
To be number two man behind Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. So there, that's bringing an experienced neocon player into the White House,
I don't know. I can't separate the ruse from the policy. And how much of what is going on now is a ruse and how much is policy? I mean, if he really knows what he's doing, and I'm not sure about that, I think many people are not sure about that, then you know, imagine if we are in his position. If you want to attack an entity that has been against you and that is still very dangerous to you, you would want to have somebody, as Lyndon Johnson used to say, you would have the camel inside the tent pissing out rather than outside the tent pissing in. So you wouldn't want to have somebody in it who knows the inside of whatever entity is against you. And perhaps this appointment is an example of this, as are perhaps some of the other appointments. Or maybe just he's just, you know, like with these Goldman Sachs appointments all over his cabinet, it is an example of where he has already given up. Who knows? It's a real, I think you're going to be puzzled for quite a little bit for a moment.
What's interesting and is always a target is when you open the U.S. mainstream media, that they are repeating, even though they had some apologies for getting us into the Iraq war, they are doing the very same thing. The New York Times particularly, and before I called you, I was quoting from their editorial attacking Trump because he did not distinguish the United States from Russia when it came to violence, and didn't defend American exceptionalism. And the New York Times refers to what happened in the Iraq War as unintended consequences. This is extraordinary that journalists work for that newspaper. I'll tell you, I worked for Hearst when I was much younger, and I was told when I went to work at the L.A. Examiner that you tell someone you play piano in a whorehouse when they ask you what you do, because playing piano in a whorehouse is better than saying you worked for Hearst.
The New York Times, but you know, isn't it interesting to see how the New York Times has lost a great deal of credibility in this past, half year or a little longer than that? And it's, of course, a very tragic story, the New York Times. I would like to say something that not everyone who has been following these stories is aware of, that the generators of propaganda, the people who invent the lies, run the risk of getting lost in their own deceit. You know, they create a labyrinth. They create a whole world of lies and lying. And at some point, because it becomes also part of their lives, they have to repeat what they have been saying, they lose their way, and they don't know anymore what's up and what's down. And I thought for some time that the New York Times gave them a handrail to, you know, they, for example, the New York Times threw out the whole Syria, the war in Syria, was giving people in the intelligence world and in the military, as well as perhaps the White House, sort of the official reality that everyone had to stick to. I mean, the official story as to what was happening. Then, you know, there would be a contradiction in the activities on the ground, but never mind, the New York Times was there to lead us and to make clear to the people who were inventing the lies what they should say to remain credible. And so credibility depended on whether or not you had absorbed what the New York Times was saying about it all. I think that role has become difficult to play because the New York Times has lost so much credibility.
I find it actually a bit of a master, essential to read, because this is what the establishment and actually the Clinton was the establishment's candidate, not that Trump doesn't have his connections to other aspects of the establishment, but basically, aside from domestic politics, foreign policy is the establishment's agenda, and Clinton was designed to carry it out. And so this is why they still have three congressional investigations. Three different congressional committees are going to investigate Russian interference, plus five independent agencies, all the taxpayers' expense when they've come up with nothing. And then we had yesterday, and we'll go into it next time, Amnesty International, which back in 1991 reported about a war crime that Iraq had committed when Iraqi soldiers supposedly went into a hospital in Kuwait and tossed babies out of incubators.
Yes.
And the Kuwaiti nurse was brought by former Congressman Tom Lantos to tell Congress how she witnessed this horrible act. And on the basis of that, Amnesty International declared Iraq committed a war crime, and we just had a new report from Amnesty International that does it, that terrible crimes committed that it's irrational, even by a dictator, irrational crimes by Syria. Maybe we could talk about that next time, but they have no hard evidence that this happened, and it seems...
But now, Jeff, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
I mean, I live in Europe, in the Netherlands, and the people around me, all these cases don't know any better. They don't have much background. They don't have much understanding of what the neocons have been and where they came from and what they, all that stuff. They don't know these things. But you live in an environment where it's obviously closer. Do people around you believe the stuff, the lies that come your way through this propaganda machine?
In this particular county, as I've said a number of times, is not Israeli-occupied territory. So I have a number of friends who do question, who do think and do question in this county. We're probably unique in the United States in that way. But still, so much seeps in people's defenses because it's an ongoing operation. National Public Radio becomes National Propaganda Radio, throughout history, whenever the United States establishment has a position it wants the public to take. You never hear a critic of U.S. Criticism of Russia or of Syria or Iraq. You don't hear any critiques on NPR because they're dependent upon Congress to fund them, and the listeners as well, but mainly they're dependent upon Congress to have the airwaves and so on. And they do good production values, great other programming, but when it comes to hard news about U.S. foreign policy, it becomes the equivalent of the New York Times.
Listen, do you agree with me that the liberals have really betrayed us? I mean, with us, I mean people who are curious and who like to uncover the truth.
Long ago. Listen, we've come to the end of the hour. Kyle, we're going to come back 2 weeks from today, and we're going to have a longer time to talk because there's so much more I want to talk to you about, including about Noam Chomsky.
So, it will be my pleasure.
So I'm sorry about the delay today, listeners as well, but stay tuned for 2 weeks. And thanks so much for being our guest in this abbreviated Takes on the World this morning, Carl.
It was my pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.